Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Dunk. That's my cue. It's Mary, everybody. How is everybody doing? I'm excited. I love Thursday night. It's one of my favorite times of the week because I get to hang out with Gene Albertson, my co-host, and then
Howdy.
We always get to talk with amazing people, and I'm really excited. How are you, Gene?
Oh, good, good. I'm excited about talking about amazing people, too. I have to say, everything you just said, I feel it, too. It's awesome.
That's why we get along so well. Would you like to tell who our guest is tonight, Gene, or shall I?
Well, sure. We were just visiting a little bit before the show. We have Susie, is it Rialt?
Roe.
She
Roe is the closest thing, but
okay,
it's complicated.
Well,
it looks complicated, but it's real easy to say.
It's definitely
right.
A lot easier than it looks, definitely. Well, you've spent many years traveling throughout Africa to work to end the AIDS epidemic. Then on one of your many trips throughout the East and Southern Africa, you and your husband found yourselves in a small rural village in Tanzania where you were introduced to 9 AIDS orphans. And it compelled you to help. And I'm hoping that's what you're here to talk with us about a little bit today. Very much
absolutely.
Welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sure.
We're glad to have you here, Susie.
Yes. It's terribly important. And being compelled is such an important thing, because when you're compelled, to me, then you just got to do it.
It's something you can't walk away from.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt, Susie?
Well, I think if you're lucky in your life, you are presented with an opportunity that allows you to throw your whole self into it and feel as though that's where you should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trained as a psychologist, and before I went to Africa, I was doing a lot of work that was deeply satisfying. But when I went to Africa, that changed the whole dynamic, and I became even more compelled, and it was not uncomplicated. I started working with the Clinton Foundation Health Access Initiative in 07, and at that point, the AIDS epidemic was going very strong, and I ended up working in 5 different East African countries, to put together grassroots teams that would figure out what was going to work in their villages, rather than having a bunch of white people come in and tell them what to do. We convened grassroots teams, and they told us what they wanted to do. And so we had some very exciting results.
Mm-hmm. Was it different from village to village with what worked?
That's a great question. I think we felt as though we had distilled the essence of what would work across the board. In fact, the methodology that we used had been imported from corporate America. It's when you ask people who are deeply enmeshed in the issue, who know it well, who live with it, to come up with ideas to change it, then you've got a huge head start. And we were able to do that with village after village after village, even if the participants were not literate. But they knew that people were dying in their villages, and they wanted to do something to help. And so we just provided the envelope, the strategies, the meetings, and the discipline for folks to come up with action plans. And all these action plans were very time-limited. We were very aggressive. We did all the action plans within a 60 to 90-day time frame.
Wow.
There's a lot
of
a lot of change programs just take so long that people run out of steam. And people who live in extreme poverty don't have a lot of extra energy or time.
Sure.
But we were able to showcase what they were doing, and we were able to make a dent in, for example, the number of women who gave birth to their babies in a clinic as opposed to in a mud hut. So that way the mothers and the children could be inoculated against the AIDS virus. So that was the kind of stuff we were focused on. It was very exciting and very, very deeply rewarding.
And groundbreaking. So, you know, you had to invent it as you went.
Mm-hmm. We did.
So how long did you work with the Clinton Foundation before
Before you started with
the Precious Project?
I started working with them in 07 and was pretty intensely involved with him until 2011, when one day my husband and I stumbled, literally, on an orphanage that was impossibly grim. It was a cinder block house with no water, no plumbing, no electricity, no nothing, except for 9 kids that were living there, and they had run out of food. And here are these kids that are jumping around. They're so happy to meet us. They're happy to ham for the camera. And we realized they're just on the edge. And up until then, I had wanted to start something local so I could just see what worked on a smaller scale than sometimes the Clinton Foundation wanted to do. And suddenly we realized we had just run into a place we could help. And so that evolved from those 9 kids we saw to now 350 kids who we built to school. Yeah.
That's so
we
amazing.
We have a primary school and a new home and a computer lab and a farm, and we've just made a lot of stuff happen, and it's very exciting. And
definitely,
we know that the kids that we're working with, these are kids that would maybe many of them not see the inside of a school, period. And
sure,
our school has just, we just learned today that we've earned some local achievements and awards for our school, which is
congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
you.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So we're very proud of that. And, of course, the COVID situation here is very worrisome, worrisome for us in the U.S. and in Africa as well. The president of Tanzania, who is, oddly enough, a PhD chemist, has decided that prayer has healed the country from the virus. He's fired the people who count the cases. He's fired the people who keep track of the virus. So we haven't had a count for a month. Our kids are all masked up and doing rigorous hand washing and so forth, but we don't really know where the hot spots are. And we know that the truckers who go across the border to Rwanda and Uganda and Kenya are very, you know, testing very high. 50% of them are positive.
Wow.
So it's a worrisome thing. Our kids so far, cross fingers, are okay. And
good.
Their families are okay. But we have really no way of knowing how that will go going forward. Yeah.
Well, I think, too, though, that with the help that they've had as far as learning about the sanitation and having the ability to have the things they need to be clean probably is valuable here.
Right. I think in Tanzania, where we are, we've created some hand-washing stations that look sexier than anything you'd see in the U.S. There's a foot pump, so you don't have to touch the faucet. And so the water then comes out of the spigot, and there's disinfectant in the soap. And those hand-washing stations are put all over the school campus and all over the small village nearest to us. So Africans are doing what they can. But the healthcare system there is stretched, to put it mildly.
I'm sure.
Sure.
It was stretched to begin with.
Of course it was. Super stretched.
I read in your book, I really enjoyed, and Jean, you may not even know this, Susie wrote a book called My Wild and Precious Life, a memoir of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about her time working with the Clinton Foundation and going into some of these clinics, because you can't really, I don't think there were very many hospitals where you went, but the clinics that she did go to were just, by our standards, atrocious, but they were doing the best they could. So I can only imagine what they're dealing with now.
Right, right.
Well, you know, and with things like the Precious Project, when you're coming, you don't have to even do much to start, because obviously you just got things rolling and it obviously immediately was better. And then, you know, when you get in a situation like that, people start getting a little more hope. Then they things get better still. So that's awesome. This is amazing.
I think that's well said. I think we have been in the business of building hope, building hope amongst families who are in extreme poverty, where domestic abuse and child abuse is very common and not protected by laws, where kids that we have taken in now have a hope for a better life. And we look at them, we see them shine, and we see the future leaders of Tanzania if we can keep up the good work.
Sure.
So there are 42 staff that we have hired to run the school, from cooks to cleaners to everybody in the whole sequence. And they are standing by, and the teachers have been very eager for teacher training, and they are remarkable. We're so proud of who they are and how much they have learned, because these teachers grew up in school systems where corporal punishment was absolutely the norm. And in our school, the clear message is, if there's any hint of corporal punishment or shaming or humiliating the kids, that is grounds for termination that day. It's happened. We have terminated people early on, and so the word got out that they're serious at Precious Project. So,
Well, you know, too, in thinking about the timing, a lot of the children that you've introduced to these new improvements are going to be coming of age as adults to help take off and drive this, I would imagine.
Right, right. We hope they'll be the leaders of Tanzania. They show all the signs of thoughtfulness and really signing up to do for others. It's really quite remarkable.
That's awesome.
And Susie has, in her book, she had some really interesting stories and some funny stories and not so funny stories about her life, which I'd love to have you share at least one. I do need to take a quick break, and I want to remind our listeners, if they'd like to call in, the number is 516-418-5651. And when we come back, maybe Susie can share one of her favorite stories about the Precious Project with us. When I walk in the spot,
this is what He's smart, funny, and very good looking, but he won't let it go to his head.
Out of all my stunning attributes, it's my humility that makes me perfect.
I'm sexy and I know it.
He's Thor, and he's hosting the new show, Thornication, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, only on AstronetRadio.com.
I always laugh inside when I hear that commercial.
Yes, me too.
I'm here with Jean Albertson and Susie Rowe. We're talking about Susie's wild and precious life. And I want all of our listeners to know, I have to tell you, breaking news. We're now heard in 31 different countries, Jean.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
wow,
we stayed stuck at 27 for a while, and we're up to 31 now. But
that's
if anybody
awesome.
Wants to call in and speak with us, our number is 516-418-5651. And I'm hoping those 30 seconds that Thor was advertising, Susie has come up with a fun story for us. Put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot for sure. Yeah. So I grew up as an Army brat, which means that you go where the Army sends you. And in my case, that meant that every 12 to 14 months we moved. So we lived in wonderful places like Bavaria and Paris, and we also lived in places like Kansas. But we had to move all the time. And so that gave, my father was a Green Beret, my mother was an artist. I was the oldest of three, and we bounced around the world. And that gave me a taste for adventure, in fact, a restlessness that that has made me unable to stay put for longer than a six-month period without going someplace.
Those roots just don't grow, do they?
They do not grow. They do not grow. My dad, instead of taking us to Sunday school on Sundays, my father didn't want to go to church. He took us kids rock climbing and rappelling. So we would be lowering ourselves down the steep side of some cliff. And that was kind of what life was like growing up. So
that's where you meet your God, right there.
That's right. That's right. Just as you're going over the lip of the canyon.
Wow.
So my father, my nickname growing up was Rocky, which I always tried to live up to because I think my father would have preferred a boy to start with, but he got what he got. So I tried really hard.
Now,
to be a
were
boy.
Your siblings all girls?
No, I had a sister and a brother.
Where was that you climbed at? I mean, just wherever you went, that's when you saw
out
the climbing?
Pretty much.
Oh, very cool.
In Bavaria, there's lots of mountains. It were pretty much wherever we were. At one point, my dad was doing a stint at the Pentagon, and there were lots of rock climbing places that we could access. Whatever they were, my parents would find them. So we never spent a boring weekend, I guess.
That's awesome. Well, I know I grew up out west here in the U.S. and in Wyoming and South Dakota. I climbed all over some just amazing granite rock formations. I never held
a
rope, though. I never have been able to do that. But yeah, just amazing things. Amazing. I think my favorite part about it was I just had a picture of in Wyoming. They have these giant, huge granite balls that are like big pieces of lava that got thrown out and just cooled, and they're laying all over the place in big piles.
Wow.
Huge, yeah. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't share that story.
Well, I sure don't have them here. And so do you still go seeking out mountains at this point? Are you we had talked that you are in Massachusetts.
We don't have very big mountains in Massachusetts, but we have some good ones up north in New Hampshire. And where we live in Africa, we're on the slopes of Mount Meru, which is just also equidistant between Mount Meru and Kilimanjaro. So on a good day, we can see Kilimanjaro. So the hiking there and the mountain climbing is quite adventuresome. I have not myself decided to go up Kilimanjaro, as when I was hiking in Nepal, I ended up with some altitude issues, and people say if you have them once, you're likely to have them again.
So
we have had enough to do with our project that I didn't need to be climbing Mount Kilimanjaro on top of it.
Sure.
Speaking of your project, I know you had a house given to you as part of that, or I don't know if it was given or you bought it. You bought that property, right?
Well, neither.
Where your house was?
We leased our little cottage from a nearby lodge, and we're incredibly appreciative of all of the Africans who were at the lodge who could help us learn to deal with what we had to learn to deal with, which is, for example, sometimes you have water, sometimes you have electricity, sometimes not. If you need hot water, you need to start a fire in a firebox external to the house. And we've also had some exotic adventures of the insects and so forth that enter the house. So we had a monster tarantula, and Gil, I wasn't there, thank heavens, and Gil took a photograph of it and showed it to some of our African friends, and they went, oh, yeah, we got those. And we've had termites. If you think of African termite mounds, have you ever seen photographs of them? They're very
tall.
I've seen them on television.
Right.
TV,
they can be 4 or 5 feet tall, conical structures. So once when we were back in the U.S., we were in touch all the time with our African friends, who we asked to just look in on our house to make sure everything was fine. And one of our friends said, well, you have a little termite problem, but we'll take care of it. Don't worry. And so I thought, okay, not a problem. And then I started thinking about these termite mounds. And then I wrote back and I said, could you take another look at the house? And the termites had, in fact, eaten the entire kitchen counter. It was gone.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was the sink, but the counter was eaten. So, and they were just about, we had a small closet where we had our little stash of special wines and so forth, and they were just about to eat through the shelf, which would have brought all the booze crashing down, which would have been
blasphemy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that
and
was in
we've
this
had
block.
Bats in the house as well. They prefer
you say bats plural.
Bats.
Did you have more than one bat at the same time?
That's a good question. We never quite found out. I think it was one really very large bat.
Coming back.
He kept coming back. And then he would like to poop on our fresh new towels in the bathroom. It was upsetting. So I would go in the middle of the night and this thing would flap out in front of my face. So it was an adventure being there.
It sounds like it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you talked about the bats and the termites and the tarantula, but did you ever encounter anything bigger than that when you were in Africa, like lions?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. We had a mongoose on our front, our side door to the kitchen for a while. It didn't come in, thank God. We have two troops of monkeys that frequent the area where we are. The big animals, the lions, the buffalo, the biggies, those tend to stay in the national park. And we can see them the same way everybody else does by paying a fee and going in and driving around with a good guide who can take us to see the big animals. But we regularly have visits from the monkeys because right in front of our house is a guava tree and a fig tree, and there's also some avocado trees and many other things. But the monkeys have discovered our place, and we have a little tin roof over our house. And so if a monkey decides to leap onto the roof, it sounds like thunder.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very noisy. So these monkeys have figured out that they can play and hassle each other and jump up and down on the roof, and they can get away with it. So we've kind of gotten used to that. We just don't ever want a monkey to come in the house because that would be a very tough situation.
That would be worse than bats and termites, probably.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
But it makes it exciting being there. And it's also very beautiful. We are in an area that is not desert. It is still quite green. There's still a lot of primeval forest. Anything that can bloom will. You can stick a stick into the ground and it will grow into a tree and bloom. So for us New Englanders, where nothing much blooms, it's quite amazing and quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. When do you plan to go back?
Well, that's the $24,000 question, isn't it?
Based on COVID, probably.
Right. We don't know when it will be safe to go back.
You almost sound
the kids
like
terribly. Yeah.
I was going to say you sound almost homesick to go back.
Yeah, you got it. We are definitely. The thing about, the kids we've been with for 10 years now, so they feel like our kids. And the bath, we love them and they love us. And so it is the second home. And Africans are different about how they make and keep friends. If you make a friend of an African, you have a friend for life. It's not like in the U.S. where you kind of shed friends when you move someplace new or change jobs. In Africa, you have a friend for life. And when we come back, it doesn't matter if we haven't been back for 10 months or hopefully not 10 years, but we will be welcomed like family and we will be treated like family and we will be greeted like family. So when we come back to Yankee New England after being in Africa, it's hard because in New England, people are a bit chilly, especially now where they're wearing their masks. Yeah, it's just hard. We live in a housing association and we come back from Africa and we pass our neighbors in the cars and we wave to them and they stare at us like, why are you waving? And we're going like, that's because that's what you do. So that back and forth piece has been tough. And also Yankees, New Englanders they're a little bit standoffish. Whereas in Africa, when you meet someone, you need to greet them. That is absolutely de rigueur. You must greet people. So you say, hello, how are you? How's your family? How are your children? How's your job? It's never okay to not greet someone else. And so when Africans come to the U.S., and sometimes people look right through them, they can't imagine. Why is that so?
Right.
So it's an extraordinary difference. And it's, for me, I always wondered when I was working with the Clinton Foundation, if I went to another country, would it be different? Would, maybe I've fallen in love with Tanzania, maybe it wouldn't be the same in Malawi. Well, yes, it was. And same in every country I went to. And how it's expressed is different, but the willingness to engage really that way is
right.
Really big.
Well,
and then there are different greetings that you have. If you're an older person than we are, we get the special older person's greeting, which is, I'm blocking on it for the moment, but we get a special greeting and then we have a special response. And it's always we feel revered as elders in Africa, whereas in the U.S., we're all but, obsolete.
Well, I watched something. It was a television show where there was a young American dating a Hispanic. And he said something about, you can come stay with me. Well, he tried to say it in Spanish. And the way he said it, her whole family came to stay with him. And he said, no, I just meant you. And she said, see, that's why Spanish is so much better. You say tú, or you say eres. And, one means you, and the other one means everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
And I'm sure that in the African countries as well, you mentioned this, the greeting for the revered, the older people. And I know that that is because they respect wisdom. They know that if you've lived
exactly.
a long time, you've got more wisdom than the younger people. I grew
right.
up in a rural area in South Carolina, and we were trained also. You wave at people, and you look. You don't just wave, and it's not like hi, good morning, how are you doing, and keep on going. You're genuinely concerned, and if somebody waves frantically, you need to stop and take care of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think that is true. From what little I've traveled in the South, it's much different than it is in the northern climates. I think we all just get cold because we're cold all the time.
Well, now, I'll tell you, out west where I grew up, it's interesting. You're talking about the waving at people and greeting folks. Out in South Dakota, you always greeted people you saw because you could go a day or so without seeing anybody. And if you're driving
right.
down the road, you always wave because that's the last person you saw for 2 hours,
Exactly.
You're so glad to see people.
Right.
But yeah,
Susie, what are the age groups of the students there at Precious?
We have the youngest kids are in what's called the baby class. So these are three
uh-huh.
and four-year-olds in a nursery school kind of thing. And then the oldest kids who we graduate at seventh grade, what is the equivalent of seventh grade, are 12 or so.
Okay.
And then at that point, they need to take a national exam. And that national exam will determine whether or not they will be allowed to proceed on to secondary school. So it's an inheritance from the British colonialists, and it's pretty brutal. So our kids are all passing the exam, which we prepped them for endlessly. But we want them to have that chance.
Wow. That's awesome.
So there are other things that make getting an education in Tanzania challenging. One is that in secondary school, you, as a girl, you may be at any point subjected to a random pregnancy test. If you fail the pregnancy test and you are pregnant, you must leave the school that day and you may not return. So think about that. So you may not have had any role in getting pregnant. In fact, it's very large number of girls are introduced to sex not by their own consent. And so this is just it's a particularly brutal punishment. The theory is that the boys will also be arrested and jailed, but they never are. They just skip town. But the girls are desperately poor. They have no resources. And, of course, their education is being cut off at a point in time where they're not going to be able to develop a vocation. So it's painful to see. It's really painful. And Tanzania, by the way, has the largest number of teenage pregnancies. Fertility rates are higher than any other country in Africa.
Oh, my.
And
wow.
Yeah, it's shocking. The president of Tanzania, President Magufuli, says things like, women, set your ovaries free and have more babies. I'm not kidding. So, and overpopulation in many African countries is a huge problem. It's a huge issue. So there are things like that that we've come to learn and have to absorb and deal with, but they're painful. And
so
there's nothing we can do.
So these girls that are shunned, are they
shut out
then
of life.
Want to be shut out of life for good? They're
exactly.
Single moms that have no. Wow. So these projects that you're working to help empower them are really showing to be successful, it looks like.
Well, we hope so.
Just, yeah.
We there's not a lot of real sex ed in Tanzanian curriculums, but we are trying to introduce much more of that. But it's difficult. There's not a, we've had a couple of kids who live too far from school and they have to walk through the woods to get to where we are, and they're at risk for being raped on the way to school. Absolutely. We have a big job to try and take care of them and help them understand how babies get made.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that, because we've had a couple of older boys try to seduce younger girls, and we've had to nip that in the bud.
Sure.
So, there's a lot of challenges.
I can only imagine. Because you've got cultural challenges as well as just trying to teach these children I know that you're not just teaching them the bare necessities. You're teaching them art and music and STEAM curricula. I mean, the Precious Project is a full-on educational organization. It's just amazing.
Oh, thank you for saying that. We have
Absolutely.
Become so, and we are so proud. And I need to say that it's not the white folks on this side of the pond that are making this happen. It's the Tanzanian educators. And they are the two directors, William and Sarah Modest, are fabulous. And they make things run. They know how to deal with the government. They know how to deal with all the families. They are amazing, and we just see them grow by leaps and bounds every year.
That's so excellent.
If there weren't those two, there would be no Precious Project as we now experience.
Well, they were the original founders, right?
Correct. And then we came along and we said, can we help? And they said, great. And so we ended up joining forces because we had access to donors in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yeah.
And I know that that has been a big help.
It's been huge.
That's amazing. Because I know that there's like a Martha's Vineyard branch, I guess you could say, of donors that really have stepped up to help in a huge way.
Yes, there's a wonderful coterie of people here on the Vineyard that have come to all our events and really support us and want to know about what's happening. And that's also true in Boston where Gil and I live. We would never be where we are without the steady commitment and support of so many people. We're so grateful.
That is
and particularly
so
now with in the middle of COVID, where everybody is struggling, that we still have people signing up to help us. It's very, very moving.
Well,
people.
I'm hoping that after this show, I'm hoping more people will go check out thepreciousproject.org and they'll fall in love with the school.
I hope
and
they
the,
will.
The
we're
faces.
We're quite proud of our website. There's a lot of cool pictures and films.
Oh,
yes.
You can really get a sense of the kids.
It's amazing.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. When we come back, I have to take another 30-second break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you a question about their uniforms because I just think they're fabulous.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Do you prefer coffee or tea? This is a question we ask on our fun and informative millennial talk show called Coffee or Tea, No Phones Allowed. And why do I know? Because I'm Anna. I'm one of the co-hosts. It's a great time. It's a professionally edited weekly series that's free to watch on Be Unique's YouTube channel. That's B-U-N-E-K-E. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode and leave us a comment with your topic or guest recommendations. We love hearing from you.
And we're back. I am here. I am your guest. Yes, I'm my own guest. I'm Mary. I'm here with Jean. I'm here with Susie Rowe talking about her wild and precious life and working with the Precious Project. I must say that I have never seen school uniforms as colorful as they have at Precious School. They're not like your typical school uniform, which are usually just navy blue and maybe red and white. But these are stunning. They're like a
almost
blue
color.
And green. Yeah. It does look like Florida colors. Maybe that's why I like them so.
Well, everybody in Africa is very colorful. No one wears black, brown, or gray. And so our kids, we actually, someone decided that we wanted to match the school uniforms to the exterior of the school buildings. So that's how they ended up being so cute.
Well, I am all about color and inside and outside color. I think it's just important to let your peacock shine and strut your peacock wherever you happen to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just looking at the picture as you were describing it, and just as you said it, the colors on the uniform of the children match the exterior of the building that's right behind
that's
it.
That's exactly right. Isn't that funny?
Kind of matches my hair, too.
It does kind of. Do you need
the green
that?
And blue part.
Maybe that's why I like them so.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, looking
now,
at the pictures on the website, definitely, if you have a chance, anybody, please go take a look at preciousproject.org. The pictures are amazing. The smiles on these children are just infectious. It's excellent. And you can donate right there on the site. It's at the top of the page. Project.
We'd love to have you visit our page and see our kids.
One of the
of
things
course,
that I've been noticing, because I went to your projects page, Precious Project has a community garden, doesn't it?
Oh, we have much more than that. We have 11 acres under cultivation. Yeah.
Whoa, what do you grow?
We,
we grow everything. We grow tomatoes and beans and anything you could imagine, corn and all the staple. Chickens, yes, chickens. I don't know how many lately, but they're exploding by the day. Yeah, so we have a garden around the school itself, and the kids take quite a bit of responsibility for caring for that. And then about 10 miles away, we've purchased another piece of land, and that is being farmed. And thank God, because food prices are going through the roof with the COVID crisis. So we're able, sure, for the most part, to feed our own, which is really crucial.
Sure. Wow.
But, you know, farming in Africa is rain dependent. And we've been lucky enough to be able to get a borehole and get some water that way, and also have some drip irrigation. So most of Africans, if you have a drought, you don't eat for that part of the year. It's just that simple.
Wow. Well, you had talked about this particular area being a little bit green. So is there, like, how much rain are they going to have on a typical, if everything goes well? Is it rain often or just seasonally there?
Well, the rainy periods in Africa are seasonal. The rainy period in Tanzania, where we are, it starts in April, May, June. And that's what they call the long rains. And then there's the short rains, which is more intermittent storms, and those come earlier in the year. So the rain in Africa is very different than the way it is in the U.S., where you have a rainy period and a sunny period. No, in Africa, it's really quite consistent. And for the most part, although we're seeing global warming have an impact, and that is scary, to put it mildly. And you may have seen in the news some of the photographs of the bug. help me
locust.
Out. Locust. Yes, thank you.
Are you talking about the locusts?
And they have been chewing their way through northern Kenya, and they can come, and in a day, they can wipe out 5 or 10 farms completely. And so now there's some discussion that they may make it to Tanzania, and we're fervently hoping that's not the case. It just feels biblical and cruel to have one more crisis on top of everything else.
Well, the locusts come every 17 years, I believe.
I'm not very savvy about locusts, but I suppose they're not supposed to come year after year, I didn't think, but they are. So it's worrisome, to put it mildly.
Well, there are definitely a lot of different things going on with the climate than we're, you know, typically used to in recent past. So we'll definitely find out what's going to happen.
I just checked online, and it says that this is the worst outbreak of the locust in 70 years in Kenya, and the worst in 25 years in Ethiopia, Somalia, and India.
And these are the countries that can least afford famine.
I know.
Sure.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah.
And there's not a lot we can do for them.
No.
You know, to thwart them. I don't think they have any known predators, I don't think. I don't know.
I don't think they do.
Not in the numbers that they have. I mean, a bird will eat a grasshopper, but not horde, you know, swarms of them like that. My goodness.
There are people that are studying them and watching them, but that doesn't help the crops.
Right.
Yeah, it says they can travel up to 150 kilometers a day and consume enough food to feed 35,000 people. And I know that in Africa, 35,000 people can't afford to go hungry.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, nothing you can really do. I mean, I for a large area, you could cover stuff. Probably not. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not savvy to that. But it's another. I don't know who said it to me once years ago, but somebody once said, "Africa will break your heart." I think at the same time, it will break your heart, it will also crack it open.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I find amazing is, and I've never been to Africa, but I've talked to people who live dual countries, you know, it's like the fortitude of the people is astounding. And they never seem to lose hope in spite of all the hardships and all the injustices that they have to endure. They just keep on smiling.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely a place I want to go. Of all the places I have not been and I would like to before I expire, is I would like to travel in Africa and meet some of the folks and see some of the wonders that I know are there.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly going on safari into the Serengeti is like being in a Disney movie. It's so magical and so unbelievably.
Well, when COVID gives us permission, we should all go back with Susie and meet the people at Precious.
Sure.
Well, I certainly hope that can happen. And so do all of the people who are in the tourist industry who are now really without any source of income. Because tourism in Africa is enormous.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Kind of like Florida. Yeah, I don't know. I still don't know what's going to happen here, but we'll muddle through better than some and worse than others.
Well, I know in Western South Dakota back in the 70s, our tourism was so important, and it was tourism by car, by automobile. And when gasoline prices went from 40 cents a gallon to, 75 or 80 cents, the entire Western half of the state, the economy just collapsed. And it never did recover like it did. Things had to evolve in different fashion over time. So, people are pretty resilient. I agree with what you said about the hope, and that's the important thing. And I think the Precious is certainly a vehicle for providing hope for an entire population of people. It's amazing.
Mm, thank you for saying that.
Very
we
much.
Never dreamed it would be so, but it has indeed generated a lot of hope in this small village and in the six adjoining villages.
And for them to go so from 9 children to over 300 is just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm still awed by it. Folks, we're down to like 5 minutes. I have to run one more commercial. I'm definitely going to want to come back to you, Susie, and see if you've got one more little story for us, maybe.
Okay.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together. Change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BUNEKE.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Well, we're back. We have about 5 minutes left in the show. I'm here with Gene Albertson, my co-host. Thank God for Gene, because he always carries the show at least until I sign on, and I can hear everything you guys are saying, but my phone, my headphone just won't work. So we're working through that. But our guest tonight is Susie Rowe, and I have enjoyed hearing you talk about the Precious Project and all the amazing people in Tanzania that have helped you find roots, even though you didn't think you had roots to put down. So did you think of, in that, what, 37 seconds, did you think of a little story to tell us about your time in Africa?
Sure. This is a story, a hard story, but a story with a happy ending. There's a little boy who is part of our project now. His name is Ebenezer, which is a big name for a little guy. He's 6 years old. And 2 years ago, his father decided that Ebenezer was not his biological son. And so the father, who's severely alcoholic, decided to dispose of Ebenezer. He first tried to strangle him with a rope around his neck, and that didn't work. The father was fortunately too drunk to pull it off. And then he decided he would try rat poison. So he first tried to put rat poison down the throat of the mom, and then tried to force Ebenezer to ingest the rat poison. We heard about it. The teachers heard about it. At the village heard about it. The father was so deeply alcoholic that he could barely stand up. But we managed to get Ebenezer out of the house, and we were able to work with the authorities to make sure that we were able to take over his care legally. And so now, a couple of years later, he's running with the pack. He's a happy camper. He doesn't show any of what you would expect after trauma like that, which, as a psychologist, flabbergasts me.
There
are many other stories like that, I'm sorry to say, because there's a lot of violence that goes along with extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the stories. But Ebenezer is now happy camper, a student, and we're so glad that we found out what was going on to be able to snatch him out of that situation.
I love a happy ending. If anybody wants to know more about the Precious Project, please visit preciousproject.org and go to Amazon or your favorite bookstore and get My Wild and Precious Life, A Memoir of Africa. We've come to the point in our show where it's time for our parting words. And I'd like to lead off with you, Susie. If you've got something you'd like to say to our listeners, please, the show is yours.
Well, I hadn't prepped anything necessarily, but I appreciate everybody's listening and their care and concern for kids like this. And I hope you will visit us on our website and stay tuned with what we're up to. We can use all the support we can get going forward. There are a lot of organizations that are struggling these days with COVID. So keep us in mind. Take a look at our cute kids on the website. And thank you so much for being such a great audience.
Okay. Gene, it's your turn.
Well, I always like to remind everybody, as you go out about whatever the rest of your time is, just make sure you're having fun. Because if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right, whatever it is.
I like it. And I want to remind everybody to greet and meet everyone you see with kindness and treat everybody with respect, no matter what you know about the person you're looking at. You don't know everything that they're going through. Susie, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I have really enjoyed this.
And
me too.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And Jean, next week I will see you when we're going to interview Prophetess Angie Williams. She's an evangelist and a singer. And if anybody wants to tune in on Tuesday night for Anna East, she will be interviewing Caden, and I am sorry, Caden, I forget your last name. She's a young lady, high school student, who just finished graduating virtually, of course, up in North Carolina. And she's all about spreading love, not hate. And with that, I will say good night, everybody.
See y'all.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.